Welcome to April 1st, 2025 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please silence or turn off your cell phones. This meeting will be webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until you turn on your speaker, or until the speaker turns on. The host will unmute you and ask you to turn your camera, if you have one. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You can remain on Zoom meeting until the completion of the item and then may choose to exit the meeting or continue. We're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance, Chair or Board Member.
Sure. All right.
Stanton. Good afternoon. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I call you Chair. Okay. Okay, may we have a roll call?
Chair Perez?
Here.
Vice Chair Gonzalez? Absent. Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Here.
Board Member Music?
Present.
Board Member Satin?
Present.
Board Member Wright?
Here.
Chair Perez, we have a quorum.
Thank you. I should get this closer. For the purpose of this meeting, the regional board members will be obtaining testimony and information from concerned and affected parties with the Colorado River Basin region regarding water quality issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this time. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those items listed in today's agenda, you will make comments at the time and when the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments generally will be limited to 3 minutes. Board clerk can now identify any speakers who have been submitted for public. Do we have anyone?
No, we do not.
Thank you. We now move to agenda item 3, which is the review and approval of the minutes for the board's prior meeting on March 4th.
Move adoption.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, sorry.
I said or approval.
Okay. Let's do the poll.
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair I'm sorry, she's absent. Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. For agenda item 4, the board will now hear an update from Laurel Firestone, our liaison from the State Water Resource Board Control Board.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning.
Great. Hi, good to see you all. Let's see, I have a few updates. One, wanted to put a plug in for the Water Quality Coordinating Committee, WQCC, the annual meeting that's coming up May 1st and May 2nd. That's a Thursday and Friday up in Sacramento. And really encourage people, if they can, to come up in person. It's when we get all of the regional water boards and state board members all together once a year. It's really great. We have a good agenda planned for, it's really all day Thursday and then half day Friday. There is a virtual participation option as well. And another kind of save the date or, you know, making sure you have on your calendar is that we are planning the annual Salt and Sea workshop that we have. Right now, it looks like we're going to do it in a single day on May 21st. In the Coachella Valley. We're still working on the exact location, and it would be all day from 9 to about 6 p.m. So put that on your calendar as well. Let's see. We also, just in terms of a few of the things going on at the State Water Board, we just held our integrated report for the 303D list workshop, and we just received comments. There's the public comment review periods due on April 2nd. We also just released our utility wildfire general order draft general order, and just proposed revisions basically for an additional 30-day public review and comment period. So we're still hoping to get that finalized and adopted by the end of the year. We have, we're still moving through the Delta Conveyance Project hearing. We will have, we had problems actually with the first one. And so we will continue the first real hearing date is going to be on April 3rd. So coming up this week. We have our first wastewater administrator hearing for the East Orosi Public East Orosi Community Services District. And that is coming up, and this will be the first time that we will use our new authority to appoint an administrator for a failing wastewater system. We have a lot more going on, including Sigma and Bay Delta and many other things, but those were the highlights I wanted to make sure to share. I'm happy. We also we reviewed last month our strategic work plan that highlights all the things coming up and the highest priorities. So that includes things like our phase two stormwater, again, Bay Delta plan update, of course, our SAFER program, PFAS, and a number of statewide nutrient efforts around harmful algal blooms and biostimulatory policies, and a lot of work around developing and supporting development of new water supplies and modernizing our water rights data. We're also continue to work on our climate resolution, and we had an update, a long update that was actually really good around just reviewing and reaffirming our work. We have an annual update around our racial equity action plan, and have made a lot of progress over the last couple of years. And just given the environment, especially from the federal level, I think it was really a nice chance to reaffirm our commitment to racial equity and review the progress and additional work we're committed to over the coming year. Happy to answer any questions, but I hope that I can see you all at WQCC, either in person or virtually, on the May 1st and 2nd, and at the Salt and Sea Workshop. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I just have, where did you say that the Salt and Sea Workshop was going to be held at? Good morning.
We don't have an exact location, but it'll be in the Coachella Valley this year.
Okay, it's still to be announced. Okay, thank you. Good to see you too. I'll be there. I plan on being there, so I'll see you then.
Yeah, I will make sure you all get the, it'll be posted, but also we'll make sure that you all get the exact location once we have that on the agenda.
Okay. And also see you at the WQCC.
Great.
Any other questions? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next on the agenda is uncontested calendar of items for adoption. All items appearing under the uncontested items calendar are acted upon the board in one motion without discussion. There are two items on the uncontested calendar, agenda items 5 and 6. Item 5 is the waste discharge requirements and the corresponding monitoring and reporting program for City of Calexico Wastewater Treatment Plant located in Imperial County. And item 6 is,
Just a note on item 5. Mm-hmm. So what happened was is that the board in its initial version agenda binder materials received a prior draft of the permit. Now, as you'll recall, prior last week, the correct version of that tentative order was sent to you via email. And just for the record, that correct version, the same version that you received, was the one that was posted for the public comment period and has been available online. So that mistake was only on your end, members of the board. So sorry about that. Anyway, that's all for item 5.
Okay. Thank you. And item 6, rescission. And substitution order for multiple facilities located in the board's jurisdictional boundaries. These facilities include Colorado River Aqueduct Conduit Structural Protection Project, Oberon Renewable Energy Project, Antoine Garibet On-Site Wastewater Treatment System, Arrowhead Estates TTM 3350, and Crimson Solar Project Battery Energy Storage System. Turning now to consideration of uncontested calendar items, does any member wish to remove any of these from the uncontested calendar? No? Okay, none? Okay. Any member of the public wishes to remove an item from the uncontested calendar? You need to have filled a speaker card, and we have none, right?
There is none.
All right, thank you. Okay, and we need a... Roll call. Well, not roll call. Motion. Need a motion?
So moved. I'll second.
Moved and seconded? Okay. Thank you.
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to contested and discussion of calendar item for adoption, agenda 7. Proceeding now, let's see here, case and desist order for Desert Knoll, Inc., Desert Knoll Subdivision Wastewater Treatment and Disposal System, San Bernardino County. I am now opening up the hearing for agenda item 7, which is a cease and desist order for Desert Knoll, Inc., Subdivision Wastewater Treatment and Disposal System located in San Bernardino County. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the second reissued hearing procedure dated January 13, 2025. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff has separated functions between the advisory team and the prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Michael Placentia, Board Executive Chair, David Lancaster, Board's Counsel. The prosecution team consists of Board Assistant Executive Officer Cassandra Owens, Board Staff Jose Cortez, Kevin Gonzalez, Michael Perez, and David Boyers, Assistant Chief Counsel to the Office of Enforcement. The discharger, Desert Knolls, Inc., represented by Deborah Kirkland, Daniel Gord, sorry for the, I'm mispronouncing this, Gochea, Andy Watson, and Jordan Kelly. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
Yes, there are. The dischargers are online, ready to speak.
Okay. I will not administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Okay. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. Okay. Please state your name and your affiliation, whether you have taken the oath before testifying. Okay, let's see here. The order of speakers on the items is presentation by Kevin Gonzalez, board staff.
And members of the board, I just want to let you know that prior to the hearing, the prosecution team timely submitted a document as rebuttal evidence. That document consisted of the State Water Resources Control Board's operative on-site wastewater treatment system policy, which was most recently revised in 2023. That document was submitted in its entirety. We made the decision to not provide that document in its entirety to you, but we will share it and we will go through it. It is something, a document of which the board can take official notice pursuant to Title 23 of the California Code of Regulations. So if it does come up, we will go through it together and we will discuss, and I will advise you on relative parts of what is effectively the law.
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah. Good morning, Chair Perez and members of the board. My name is Kevin Gonzalez, and I'm a water resource control engineer with the Colorado River Basin Water Board. I have taken the oath. This presentation addresses concerns with the Desert Knolls Subdivision's wastewater treatment and disposal system. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order requiring the discharger to comply with its waste discharge requirements. Next slide, please. In this presentation, I'll show you where the facility is located, and then I'll discuss its waste discharge requirements, history of violations, and staff inspections from 2015 to 2022. I'll describe the notice of violation that resulted from the inspection in 2022, and actions taken by the discharger in response. Then I'll go over the need for a cease and desist order and contents of the revised tentative order. I will then discuss the discharger's comments and summarize the presentation and provide a recommendation. Next slide. To begin, this slide shows the location of the Desert Knoll subdivision. The picture to the left shows a town of 29 Palms with Desert Knoll shown in the red oval. It's about 1.5 miles north of Highway 62 and about a mile north of the 29 Palms City Hall. The subdivision itself is shown in the picture to the right. As of last year, 40 homes have been constructed on the southern edge of the development. Desert Knoll's wastewater treatment facility is at the northern edge of the development and is shown in the red oval to the far right. The remaining 137 homes were planned to be built between the existing homes and the wastewater treatment plant. At present, there are no plans to expand the development. Next slide, please. Desert Knoll is regulated by Waste Discharge Requirements Order Number R7-2006-0057. Which is found as Exhibit 1 in your evidence list. For the remainder of this presentation, I'll refer to these waste discharge requirements, WDRs, as the permit. The permit was adopted in 2006 prior to construction of any homes. The permit states that domestic wastewater from the planned 177 homes will flow to an activated sludge treatment plant with disposal to a geoflow subsurface irrigation system and 6 backup seepage pits. This permit is similar to many other waste discharge requirements that were adopted in the mid-2000s for discharges of domestic wastewater. In addition to standard prohibitions and specifications, there's a flow limit as well as effluent limits for 5 constituents: pH, biological oxygen demand (BOD), total suspended solids, total dissolved solids, and total nitrogen. Next slide. This slide presents some of the monthly average effluent limits set under the 2006 order. BOD and TSS have a limit of 30 milligrams per liter. pH has a range between 6.0 to 9.0. Total nitrogen has a limit of 10 milligrams per liter. And TDS has a limit of 350 milligrams per liter. Next slide. Water Board staff have inspected this facility 5 times since 2013. In 2013 and 2015, staff did not note any violations. In 2017, staff found that wastewater was present at the ground surface within the geoflow field. A notice of violation was issued stating that the geoflow system could not be used until it was repaired. The discharger subsequently submitted evidence that it had been repaired. The picture in the bottom right corner is from the 22 inspection and depicts one of the extended aeration tanks. In 2022, staff found that the lift station had corroded and no longer worked. Instead, temporary pumps and hoses were used to move the influid into the treatment basin. In addition, one of the two anoxa mixers was inoperable. Treated wastewater was discharged using the GeoFlow subsurface irrigation system to a non-landscaped area or to three seepage pits, instead of the landscaped parkways and six seepage pits described in the WDRs. Next slide, please. In June of 2022, Water Board staff issued a notice of violation, NOV, which is found as Exhibit 10 of the evidence list. The violations include failure to properly operate and maintain the wastewater treatment facility, and failure to comply with the effluent limits. The NOV required the discharger to hire an engineer and then submit two reports. The first report was to document the replacement of the missing or non-operational components of the wastewater treatment plant, and the second report was to include a description of and proposed timeline for modifications to ensure that the effluent will consistently meet the WDR's effluent limits. Next slide. The discharger responded by hiring an engineer who inspected the site and then submitted mentioned reports. The first report stated that the flow meter's batteries had been replaced and it was now working, and the repairs to the anoxic mixer were underway. The second report was a plan to upgrade the wastewater treatment plant in phases, starting in March 2023 and ending in June 2024. Within a few weeks of its submittal, staff approved the phase upgraded plan with the request that the discharger submit quarterly progress reports. Although improvements were to have begun in early 2023, progress reports document that nothing had happened until September 2023, and at that time, only minimal improvements were completed. There has been no progress since September 2023, and the wastewater treatment plant effluent still consistently violates the WDRs as shown in Attachment A to the revised tentative cease and desist order. Next slide, please. Yeah. The prosecution team is proposing this order because we have already allowed the discharger over 2 years to voluntarily address the problems at the wastewater plant, yet the plant is still not operating per the standard in the WDRs. Although some of the problems have been addressed, upgrades are still needed to the influent lift station. Since the notice of violation issued in June of 2022, the treated effluent has exceeded the total nitrogen effluent limit 98% of the time and has occasionally exceeded the biochemical oxygen demand, total suspended solids, and pH effluent limits. Next slide, please. The cease and desist order, CDO, was previously notified for public comment to be considered for adoption at the board on February 11, 2025. However, the discharger requested a continuance to a future board meeting. The CDO was re-noticed, and as a result, the dates for the required deliverables in the CDO have been modified, as reflected in the revised tentative CDO. If adopted, the revised cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit multiple technical reports, most of which must be prepared by a California registered engineer. The first report is due July 1, 2025. The report will tell us the engineer that's been hired to complete the task in the CDO and include a financing plan describing how the discharger will obtain the funds needed to upgrade the treatment plant and then properly operate and maintain it. The report will also include the engineer's work plan for upgrading the treatment plant to consistently meet effluent limits. On October 1, 2025, the discharger is to submit a report evaluating the current disposal capacity of the wastewater plant, and if necessary, propose improvements to meet the disposal capacity allowed by the WDRs. Progress reports are due in February 2026 and May 2026. By August 1, 2026, the discharger is to submit a technical report documenting that the wastewater treatment plant has been upgraded as proposed and that adequate disposal capacity has been installed. By September 1, 2026, the effluent must consistently meet the permit's limits for BOD, TSS, and total nitrogen. In addition, the discharger shall implement reasonable source control methods and do its best to meet the TDS effluent limits. Next slide, please. On this slide, I wanted to take some time to address the comments that have been made by the discharger. The first comment was that Desert Knolls is a disadvantaged community. The requirement to build and maintain a wastewater treatment plant disproportionately affects the residents who lack the resources to bear such burdens. Staff's response? Staff concur. We recognize that the Desert Knoll community is a disadvantaged community and that the requirement to maintain a wastewater treatment facility may disproportionately affect its residents. The permit was for 177 home sites and only 40 home sites have been completed. Staff have addressed this by re-evaluating the volume and contaminants present in the wastewater. Staff reclassified the facility's threat to water quality from 2B to 3B. The 3B classification indicates that the discharge could degrade water quality without violating water quality objectives. This lowered the cost of the permit. The annual permit cost will now be reduced from $14,103 to $4,439, according to the 2024-2025 fee schedule. Next slide. Existing facilities. The discharger contends that it should be allowed to install septic systems like many other homeowners in the community. Staff's response is that in 2013, the State Water Board's on-site wastewater treatment system, OTS policy, became effective. Existing OTS or septic systems that are properly functioning and are not contributing to an impairment of surface water, as specifically described in Tier 3 of the OTS policy, are automatically included in Tier 0. The OTS policy allowed existing septic systems to remain in place unless they were failing or otherwise require corrective action. However, for any septic system installed after 2013, the OTS policy established specific density requirements. On-site wastewater treatment systems in the City of 29 Palms are not regulated by a local management program or LAMP. However, these systems are regulated by the OTS policy as specified in Tier 1. Tier 1 of the OTS policy, which is applicable to the Desert Knoll area, provides for an allowable density of 2.5 acres per single-family dwelling unit to permit the installation of a septic tank or on-site wastewater treatment system. The allowable density is established on the basis of annual rainfall in the location of the development. The area of each parcel in Desert Knoll is only about half an acre. The current lot sizes do not meet the requirements to install a septic system or on-site wastewater treatment system. Next slide, please. The discharger has also suggested enrolling into the State Board's general order for small domestic wastewater treatment systems since their flow is less than 100,000 gallons per day. Enrollment in the general order does not require a nitrogen effluent limit for treated wastewater discharges with a flow less than 20,000 gallons per day. Desert Knoll currently discharges an average of 6,200 gallons per day, so they could qualify for this permit. Staff's response? The discharger may submit an updated report of waste discharge based on an updated ROWD, which is Report of Waste Discharge, with an attached engineering report. Regional Water Board staff would consider the most appropriate permit for the discharge. Although enrollment in the general order is an option, the general order states that the executive officer may determine that the discharge would be better regulated by a waiver of WDRs, individual WDRs, a different general order, an enforcement order, or a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System NPDES permit. Next slide, please. The purpose of the cease and desist order is to ensure compliance with the current permit. On this slide is a summary of the findings included in the revised tentative cease and desist order. First, the wastewater treatment plant has consistent violations of the nitrogen effluent limit, and there has been significant delayed maintenance. The effluent is not currently being discharged as permitted. In fact, the discharge which currently goes to the geoflow system is daylighting, meaning the wastewater discharge subsurface is rising through the soil column and ponding on the surface. This revised tentative cease and desist order will set timeframes and expectations for compliance, and the goal is to have this facility in full compliance by September 2026. The revised cease and desist order includes language allowing the executive officer to approve time extensions if delays are beyond the control of the discharger. Next slide. The prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the revised tentative cease and desist order. This ends our presentation, and staff would be glad to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Comments from the discharger?
Yes, we do have a few speakers. Daniel Goicochea.
Good morning. My name is Daniel Goicochea. I don't have any comments on what was presented just now. I'll wait till it's my turn to talk for my statement. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have some questions for staff.
Hold on one sec. Before we get into that, I think so we've completed the public forum. Everybody on that list who submitted a speaker card for this this agenda item, they are affiliated with the discharger and part of the discharger's case.
Correct.
All right. So I think we can, I think it would be appropriate to proceed with the discharger's presentation or, you know, whatever, give them the space for whatever arguments they want to make. And then we can, then you can address questions to staff, I think.
I think it might be beneficial to question staff first, and then the discharger may answer questions because of the questions I've asked of staff.
That's fine, too.
Okay.
Okay. On slide six, can you bring up slide six? Yeah, it states 2013, 2015, no violations noted. Do we know how many homes were built at that time and what the flow was?
Jose, do you want to come up here? And you might have a little bit more experience with this since I was not here at the time. So,
well, I don't have an exact number, but it would have been less than 40, right? Because the initial build-out, they started out in, 2007 or 8, and they were building homes as, you know, time went by. But I don't have an exact number for you.
Okay. And then I have a – it mentions it's a disadvantaged community. Does that mean that the purchasers of the real estate have a maximum income level, or is it the value of the property compared to – the surrounding areas?
No, I think we based that on the median income of the community.
Of just these 40 homes?
No, 29 palms.
Oh, so
the city of 29 palms.
Do we know what the average value of one of these homes is compared to the total average in 29 palms?
No, as far as I know, we didn't investigate that.
Okay, so, okay, that's good. And then my other question is, if they can't meet the requirements with 40 homes, is there any way we can safeguard this and say you can't build any additional homes till you can meet the requirements of the permit?
Actually, if they were to build more homes, there would be a higher likelihood that they could meet the effluent limits. That one of the problems that they are having at this location is that it the facility or the treatment plant is over-designed, and it's not receiving enough flow.
Oh, okay.
So it basically what it does, it consumes the microbes that consume the nutrients, and so it can't keep up. Right? It's.
So how many properties do they need where it can start operating correctly?
I think we would probably get that information better from their engineer, right? They did. I don't know if I should throw this out there, but they did have a proposal not too long ago to expand the development. And that was, you know, they were ecstatic about it. The Desert Knolls community was. They were really looking forward to that. But as I understand it, that has been put on hold.
So the developer has informed staff that due to the flow is why we're not meeting the requirements?
That's correct.
And staff concurs that they're probably correct with that?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question. So one of the options available to the discharger is to opt into the small domestic general permit. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And would that process, were they to continue down that path, what happens to this revised general order? Like, the permit still stands until such a time as the new permit takes effect, or how do these two work in tandem?
Right. So if the discharger submits a report of waste discharge to enroll into the general order, we would first evaluate all of the information that's submitted and make a determination really based on a lot of things, right? Basically the site-specific area, how the discharge is going to affect the groundwater, and many other factors. But we do take a very, in-depth analysis of what the situation is like to make the determination if it's okay to enroll them in the general order. Now, should that happen, if we do issue them, we would issue them a notice of applicability, right? And once that notice of applicability becomes effective, say at the very next board meeting, if we're fast enough, we can get a rescission order to you, right? A rescission and substitution order that would basically rescind the 2006 order.
And that would, I guess, preclude some of the improvements we're requesting in here? Because, I mean, it doesn't solve the infrastructure problem, right? But because they're at the tier zero discharge effluent limit or whatever, that's could potentially, they don't have to meet the same standard. I guess I'm confused. So what does it mean then to rescind the cease and desist order, having not made the improvements to the water treatment plant? Because those problems presumably haven't gone away. We're just not holding it to the same standard.
Okay. That's correct.
Some of the improvements would still need to be done, right? Like their lift station that's malfunctioning, that would have to be corrected, right? So the plant would have to be modified or upgraded so that it would be operational. But yes, essentially, if they were enrolled into the general order because of the volume of the discharge, the effluent limitations would drop off. With the exception of BOD and TSS, those remain.
Sorry, so in final question too. So the plant is not operating correctly because of it's not hitting the minimum flow parameters or whatever. And that's going to be the improvements to the lift station or whatever will address that part of it, right? I guess I take it to mean. So if they did enter this lower tier of permit, I just want to make sure I get that their plant is going to work.
When you say tier, are you referring to the OTS policy?
I believe the presentation made something about as a disadvantaged community, they can be held to a different standard of groundwater discharge parameters
that's not consistent with the law. I mean, we do care that there are disadvantaged communities, and to the extent the board does have discretion, you may account for the disadvantaged nature of this community. Keep in mind that the disadvantaged community status extends to the area of 29 Palms as a whole, including, for example, the other cease and desist orders for the other communities that you've issued these kinds of things to. Now, what we're talking about is whether or not it would be more appropriate to enroll down the line this facility into that general order that was issued by the state water board. And at that point, this is a little bit of a tricky issue, because ordinarily when we issue revised WD waste discharge requirements and there's an existing cease and desist order, obviously, if the requirements change, they're no longer threatening to violate requirements that no longer exist. Now, there may be some requirements that carry over, and those requirements could carry on into into the enrollment under the new order.
However, I think it would be best to reevaluate the cease and desist order on a provision by provision basis, you know, if that enrollment occurs. At this point, we're not talking about whether or not the facility should be enrolled at this time, although it's something that you may express opinions on in providing guidance and directions to staff.
Right. And if I may add some clarification to that, if it were decided that we could enroll this facility into the general order, they would, by default, be held to lower standards, not necessarily because they are a disadvantaged community, but because of the flow, right? It's the discharge flow volume that changes everything, right? It becomes a lower threat to water quality.
Right. And then thank you for all that clarification. I guess my question is that if the facility isn't working because the flow isn't high enough, us changing the regulatory standards does not address that issue. So I guess it would stand to reason that changes to the plant still need to occur to accommodate the lower flows, regardless of what we set our effluent limits to.
I'm operating under the assumption that we're enrolling them in the general order.
Understood.
Okay.
Yes.
Not until the plant hits 20,000 gallons per day or greater, then the effluent limitations for nitrogen also kick in. Yeah.
But there are some problems with the operation of the plant, including the location of the discharge and the fact that the discharge is daylighting. Those things will still have to be addressed no matter what permit they have.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What do you mean daylighting?
It's surfacing.
It's floating to the top of the soil bed, and you can see water on the top of the ground.
Okay.
So the wastewater is basically on the top of the ground. And if you look at the photo, of the facility, adjacent to it are other homes. So there's the possibility that other people could come see along the edge there. There are other homes there. Isn't that correct? To the left.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's the opportunity for people to be exposed to that wastewater that's sitting on top of the ground because it's not being disposed properly.
Right.
So isn't that more important than flow right now then? If we can't fix that, does it matter if we fix the flow?
I would say that as far as urgency and expediency, yes, fixing the daylighting problem is more urgent.
And do we know what the additional flow is we would need so the plant would operate? Is it 100 gallons per day? And if so, does it make sense since eventually there's going to be 177 homes that they put in a well and take raw water and supplement if it's only 100 gallons per day? Because that's only a couple acre feet per year, and it's going to be substituted for residential down the road.
Right. Now, if I understand what you're saying, are you saying supplement the water with raw water?
Yes.
Drinking water?
Yes.
No, that wouldn't help. That would dilute the effluent. That would dilute the wastewater.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So you would have, that would be counterproductive actually. Yeah. No, what is needed is for the wastewater flow to increase. And I don't have an exact number for you because that's really something that their engineer needs to figure out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Any other comments or questions? I do have maybe an awkward one. I don't understand why being a disadvantaged community would constitute in having less standards.
It doesn't. The disadvantaged community really kind of, for us anyways, it kind of propelled us down the road of looking at what is the actual what is the No. The benefit. The degradation of a beneficial use, right? The groundwater degradation, right? Because it is such a low flow, we changed their designation from 2B to 3B, which lowered their costs significantly.
Well, the cost makes sense, just the quality. I mean, the standard doesn't make sense to me.
Right, right. Yeah, that one is, honestly, that one is a bit of a gray area. But again, because the volume is as low as it is, the actual possibility of causing harm to the groundwater is significantly reduced, right? So, them being a disadvantaged community, you know, that doesn't really relieve them of having to meet the standards. The standards are what they are, right? And it is that groundwater up in that area is a municipal and domestic drinking water source. So we have to protect it as such.
I mean, is it that the question of costs came up through the discussion of disadvantaged communities? So like the same standard apply if it were, for example, in country club somewhere, but that was still had the same rate of flow. Is that
right? Yeah, that was one of the asks, to say, one of the recommendations from the discharger, that we take a look at their you know, their fee structure and see if there was something that we could do about, you know, easing their burden a little bit. And it turns out that there was.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Thank you. Okay, comments from the public?
Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
Chair. Back Perez, to this. We still need to go back to comments from the discharger.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Back to the comments from the discharger.
Yes. Going back to Daniel Gogochea.
We'll let the discharger's team come up and present in any order that they want. Oh, they're all online. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay. Then I guess if it'll be up to Mr. Gogochea or anybody else on the discharger's team, whoever wants to speak first.
Good morning. Thank you. John Coons will go first, and then I'll speak after him, and then Andy Watson.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is John Coons. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of Desert Knoll from the standpoint of the operations of the plant. I'm on record as the chief plant operator, and my other credentials have been submitted previously, so I'll get right into my presentation. A lot of this has been covered.
Excuse me, have you taken the oath?
Yes. I'm sorry, yes. Yes, I have taken the oath. Yes, I have.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll proceed. Some of this has been discussed, but I want to summarize it in a very succinct fashion. The design flow is 50,000 gallons per day based on 177 homes, with each home providing a daily flow average of 282 gallons per day. The actual flow from 2023 and 2024, as stated previously by Kevin Gonzalez, was 6,200 gallons per day. There presently are 40 homes connected. The potential development buyer is not proceeding. New homes are not going to be built in the foreseeable future. So the total burden of operating this plant is held by the 40 current homes. Now, the average flow per home is 160 gallons per day, due to practicing conservation majors and being very judicial in the use of the water. So the combination of having fewer homes and less flow per home means that we're actual flow is 12% of design. Now, this has a big impact on nitrogen control, which is the predominant area that this plant is not achieving. Nitrogen control is a two-step process. The influent total nitrogen must be oxidized in a two-step process to nitrate. This requires oxygen We use autotrophic bacteria, fairly easy to achieve with adequate oxygen. The organisms in this phase are very robust, and we don't have any problem at all oxidizing influent ammonia all the way to nitrate. The second step is to remove nitrate by conversion to nitrogen gas, and this requires the absence of free oxygen. It uses a heterotrophic bacteria, which are much more sensitive to environmental changes like pH, temperature, contact time, issues like that. We use raw BOD, carbonaceous material, in the raw sewage for energy for the conversion of this step from nitrate to nitrogen gas. Now, the proper conditions for the term denitrification, that's taking away the final step of the nitrogen removal, requires a 4-to-1 ratio of BOD to total nitrogen in the influent, and those conditions exist. We've checked it several times, and I'm comfortable that that ratio is correct. The absence of free oxygen in what's called the anoxic tank, and it requires adequate mixing in the anoxic tank to bring all of these organisms are not free swimmers, so you have to bring everything in contact to each other. That requires adequate mixing, which we have. Requires a very high return of solids from the clarifier to the anoxic tank to get the organisms in the right environment to force denitrification. We're carrying as high a, it's called mixed liquor suspended solids. We're carrying as many solids in terms of pounds that we can in the plant and still not violate the TSS restriction limit with carryover from the clarifier. So it's a very delicate balance of as many solids as I can have in the plant without carryover in the clarifier. We have to have healthy, active young sludge. Sludge is not always active. It could be quite old. We did a microscopic view of that a few months ago and found very little motility, not much movement at all with the organisms. So we inoculated the sludge with 4,200 gallons from a very active denitrifying sludge from another plant, and that has had some good effect. So the reasons for incomplete nitrification is that we have too much oxygen in the aeration with carryover to the anoxic tank via sludge return. Remember I said I want to take all the sludge I can back into the anoxic tank, but that's carrying oxygen with it. The blowers are sized for 50,000 gallons per day, and the actual flow is 6,200 gallons per day, as we stated. The blowers are positive displacement. That means they're either on or off. I don't have the mechanism to vary the speed like I do at other plants that are behaving very, very well in nitrogen control. There's no blower output modulation capable. If the blowers can be operated via a timer, meaning on-off operation, but then when the blowers go off, I lose my return sludge. It goes to zero, hence I lose the ability to get the sludge back where I need it. So what we did was we converted a waste holding tank to become a pre-anoxic tank to deplete oxygen before it goes to the anoxic tank itself. And the results have been quite positive. I've shared the results with Kevin Gonzalez recently. And the results for this calendar year 2025 is that we're hovering around the low teens, 13 to be more exact. So we're really making a lot of progress, but not quite there. Also, the discharge goes to a drip field that is 36,000 square feet with a very good attenuation. We acknowledge and recognize that there's a couple areas where apparently rodents have gnawed the tubing, and that needs to be repaired. That was the daylighting that was discussed earlier. That's a minor repair and an ongoing repair as well, because the rodents will go for the water. And we could fence the area, but it didn't gonna keep a rodent out. So that concludes my presentation. I certainly request eligibility for a general order for small flows. We have this general order at several other plants that we operate, and it's a very good permit that acknowledges the low flow and really acknowledges the very, very small pounds per day of actual nitrates entering the water table. And with the excellent attenuation that we have by discharging the water up at 8 inches subsurface, there's a lot of ground purification that can occur. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation or accept questions.
Yeah. Hi, John. Ed Music. It sounds like even if all 177 properties were built, the plant's still twice as big as you need. Would it be operating fine if everything was built right now, or is it still too big, and is the long-term solution getting a smaller facility at that site?
Well, the likelihood of Daniel can talk about this later. The likelihood of this build-out appears to be rather dim. The builders just the last builder stumbled with the hookup fees of the water, how much the city wanted for the potable water hookup, and pulled out of the development. I feel that in the foreseeable future, we're stuck at 40 homes, and certainly the technology is adequate if we had 177 homes. In fact, I did an experiment, a short-term experiment, and added water to the influent at the lift station just to say what would happen if the homeowners actually sent in, weren't so judicious with their water and, you know, flushed twice and dishwasher running with partial filling and stuff like that, and got up to the 282 gallons per day per home average, and my nitrates dropped to 1.2. So I think that is not a conclusive test. It was a small short-term exercise to see kind of where we would be. But I guess being a water waster, which is not the intent of this permit, showed that it would certainly help our cause. And by adding fresh water or encouraging, I hate to even say it this way, encouraging homeowners to waste water, doesn't do anything to the total pounds per day of the pollutant that's entering or leaving the plant. It just makes it easier to convert. So that, I think that question was asked earlier about the flow per household. If it went up, would it have an impact? And yes, it does. I'm not saying a 5-day study is conclusive, but the indication is certainly dramatic.
So what, from your experience, what is the perfect size for these 40 homes? And what would be there today that would operate properly and wouldn't have any issues? Mm-hmm. How big of a facility?
Well, certainly what would happen is, let's assume this 282 gallons per day is the right answer. You'd multiply that by 40, and that's going to get you a number up around 12,000, just rough numbers, 12,000 gallons per day. And if you were issuing a permit, the developer would come to you and say, I'm going to install a 12,000 gallon per day treatment plant, and I am requesting a permit for that. And probably the general order would be the right way to go with that plan. And really what we're saying here is that we have a permit that doesn't reflect the conditions today and probably in the foreseeable future, although the general order does allow flows up to 100,000 gallons per day, a lot of flexibility in that general order. So to answer your question, Mr. Music, is that if I were a developer and I want to put in 40 homes, I would be requesting for something like 12, 14,000 gallons per day. I would then buy a treatment plant much smaller than the one I have and install that.
Okay. And John, 280 gallons per day sounds really high for that area after working up in Yucca Valley for 20 years. And part of that might be outside irrigation too, but 280 gallons per day sounds very high for a single family home in 29 Palms.
Well, sir, all I did was look at what the design was in 2006. Okay. It was 50,000 gallons per day reporting to the wastewater plant, which then means it would exclude outside irrigation. This is strictly what went down the sewer, and it was their projection. And I'm not here to say that the conditions haven't changed since 2006 and everybody's using less water. I'm just saying that additional flow makes this oversized plant easier to operate. Is that a fair summary of what I'm presenting?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it really sounds like the long-term solution, if there's only 40 homes, is they need a smaller facility.
That's true, and making the facility that they own behave like a small facility is very difficult to do.
Right.
Yeah, and nitrogen is the only concern that I have about this plant. It's very delicate to maintain that balance. And like I said, I've been submitting information to Kevin Gonzalez on a regular basis, and I think he sees the picture and concurs with the challenge.
Thank you, Mr. Combs. Next.
Yes. Now we can go back to Daniel Gokochea.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. My name is Daniel Gokochea, and I'm the current president of Desert Knoll HOA Board of Directors. I've been on the board since 2019. And I have taken the oath. I would like to first confirm a couple of facts and some questions that are given by the board members. First, John Combs is correct. We do only have 40 homes, and we've been trying to push this ever since we've been interacting with the water board over the years. Out of the 177 planned homes that was planned in 2006, there was a question about when homes were stopped being built. My home was one of the last ones that they were built in 2015. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they were lived in. I think that when I bought mine in 2019, it was still being rented out or whatnot, or owned by the original owner. So we currently do not have anyone that's waiting or postponed their building. They dropped out entirely due to the mentioned reason, the hookup fee for potable water imposed by the city. And so we currently do not have any more homes that are on project or planned to be built. Right. Next, I would like to talk about our annual permit. I know that Mr. Kim Gonzalez, they mentioned in their statement that they reduced our permit fee from before, which was whenever we received it every year, we were paying it. But we thought it was way over the price in terms of our small community. So I reached out to the water board this year, and I got good response back. And they said they would reassess, and they did on March 10th, 2025, moving us from 2B to 3B. And that reduction in the fee cost will help us with our financial situation. Well, I will talk more on in later in my statement.
Hey, sir, what's the average lot size for this development?
I believe that was mentioned, but I can't confirm that. Our houses are, it's like a suburban community. Everyone's pretty close together. We share fences and whatnot. We do definitely don't have no 2.5 acres for each lot size.
Is it a half acre, quarter acre? Do you know?
I would say half acre. That half would be acre? Just an estimate, I guess.
Okay. And, you know, since there's only 40 homes, what are you paying currently for your monthly sewers?
So our HOA dues started in 2019 around 150, and we progressively increased them to maintain tempo with our requirements for our water treatment plant. $255 per home.
$255 per month?
Per month, yes.
For the wastewater treatment plant?
HOA.
It almost all goes to the wastewater treatment plant.
So about $3,000 a year.
Okay.
Per home.
You mentioned when it's your time to speak. This is your time to speak. Go ahead and proceed, please.
Yes, thank you, ma'am. Next, I will talk about the flows confirmed by mentioned both by the other side, the water board, and John Combs. We do have a facility that's only rated for that about 50,000 gallons per day. And I want to confirm and that 6,200 that John stated is our gallons per day. If you could, I submitted a PowerPoint that shows the flow chart from State Water Resource Control Board order, general waste discharge requirements for small domestic wastewater treatment systems, dated September 23rd, 2014, attachment A. And this is what I would like to talk about at this time.
Okay. Yeah, let's. That was a part of your pre-hearing submittal. Let's see if we can find a way to pull that up on the screen. It was in the prosecutor discharger's evidence, I believe. Oh, hang on. Let's just press pause one sec and let's see if we can get that material up on the screen. In the meantime, I will actually, Mr. Goicoechea, is that how you pronounce your name? Sorry.
That's fine. It's Goicoechea.
Goicoechea. Okay. Excellent. Mr. Goicoechea. Let's see if I can pull that up. I think the board members do have a copy of that document that you submitted in their binder in front of them. I see member Beltran Serrano shaking her head, nodding her head. Yes. Okay. So I think she already found it. So let's see if we can pull it up.
The flow chart? Is that what he's asking?
Was this the flow chart, Mr. Goicoechea?
Yes. Attachment A, the flow chart.
Excellent.
Is this it? Here it is.
And Mr. Goicoechea, you do have the ability to share your a window or a screen, I believe, but maybe you might not necessarily need to do that. Hold on. Hang on while we pull it up.
If everyone has it in front of them, I can just talk to it.
Just give us a second, and I'm going to look for the
1-2. It's right after the report.
All right. We're waiting on all the board members to be able to pull it up. They're still conferring. I'm looking for it. Do you remember what page it was? What page number is it?
He just said a flow chart.
I don't have a sequential number.
See?
Oh, yeah. You're going in the wrong direction, all right? Oh, there we go. Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay. All right. Members of the board, do you have a flow chart in front of you?
Yes.
Page 38 of the attachment 1 to the State Water Board's general order.
1-2.
1-2, sorry.
All right, thank you, everybody.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. Attachment A, nitrogen effluent limit evaluation. This definition, the context is taken straight from the order. The nitrogen effluent limit will only be imposed where required to protect beneficial uses of groundwater and surface water. It should not be selected as a default to add water quality protection where the added expense of nitrogen control is not required. Now you look at the flow chart. This provides a method to evaluate a discharge in the receiving environment to determine the applicability of a nitrogen effluent limit. And this is our stated by John Combs and the Water Board, the one of the water discharge requirements that we are consistently, I believe he's mentioned 98% of the time were in violation. Evaluation of the need for the nitrogen effluent limit is a two-step process. In the first step,
applicability of a nitrogen effluent limit is determined based on the flow rate and site-specific characteristics of the receiving environment. In the second step, effluent limits are based on further evaluation level, the threat related to site-specific characteristics, the discharge and receiving environment. So if you take a look at the flow chart, it's pretty easy to look at. A1 exceeds 20,000 gallons per day flow rate. We already confirmed and mentioned by both sides and our engineer specialist that we are not over 20,000. We're in more of the realm of 6,200. So this is a no, and it takes us to the left side of the flow chart and goes straight to where it says nitrogen effluent limit is not required. And this also bypasses A2 through 5 and A6. However, this is a two-step process, and we will go to the next page, step B, nitrogen effluent limit determination. B1, nitrogen limits required, no nitrogen limit not required based on our site-specific conditions. So at this point, we're done utilizing this flowchart to determine our nitrogen effluent. And this is what me and John Coons have been looking at. And we brought to the attention of the water board on so they can look at it as well. And I believe they concur that we do meet this requirement. So based off of attachment A, we are requesting a general order for small flows permit reclassification where our nitrogen effluent limit is not required for our facility. The next thing I would like to talk about is our financial situation and address the concerns of the progress that we have made. So since November 2022, the engineer came on deck, which was mentioned by the water board, and they cited us with violations, but most important to us was the financial cost. It was about $75K worth of upgrades that we had to make. And we came up with a plan and we submitted that to the water board and we were on track and we spent about $20,000 to $25,000 a year over through 2023 and 2024 until last year when we had to talk to the water board and we were notified of the cease and desist order. So with me saying this, the lift station is the only other upgrade that we have not completed yet. And that was quoted by a water quality specialist to us for $44,800. Coupled with the cease and desist order where reports will be required for an average estimate rounded up to $8,000, that already puts us at almost $60,000. Which we have spent over more than that in 2 years. And our current tentative cease and desist order is only forecasted for us to make these requirements and pay for it with our financial ability only in within 1 year, which is not reasonable to our original plan where we're only spending $20,000 to $25K over each year. So that is one point that I would like to make. So with that being said, if we were to adhere to this, which we want to, and we have been submitting and making the improvements, I would like to change a couple things to the tentative cease and desist order. We would still maintain the progress reports on a quarterly basis, but I would request that us doing final completion moved from 2026 to 2029. That would give us 4 years and approximately $80,000 to work with. And that will be to pay for the upgrade for the lift station pump, maintenance, and any other foreseen upgrades, the geoflow potential upgrades that we have to do based off the inspection that is required in the cease and desist order, as well as all the reports, and not do any increases to our financial situation, which have already been increased substantially over the past couple of years due to the wastewater treatment. So in summary, again, I would like to request for us, our Desno community,
the general order for small flows permit, as well as an extension of another additional 3 years to 2029 for our cease and desist order. Thank you. I'd like to hand it off to Andy Watson, please.
Thank you.
Andy Watson? Andy, can you hear me?
He was online, ma'am. He might have stepped away.
Do we have any more speakers?
We have someone from the public on, also on Zoom.
A member of the public, or is he appearing on behalf of the discharger?
Well, appearing on behalf of the discharger. But...
Okay. Was he identified in their pre-hearing? This.
It's Jordan Kelly.
He was not identified as part of their speaker list, as I recall it.
Yep. That's correct. I am not speaking, just observing on behalf of Desert Knoll.
All right.
Hello?
I'll leave it to the prosecution team.
There's Andy Watson.
Okay. We have Mr. Watson back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go. Please proceed, and we'll address Mr. Kelly in a moment.
Sorry,
please proceed, Mr. Watson.
I'm wearing a black t-shirt, blue jeans. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah.
Please proceed.
My name is Andy Watson. I'm wearing a black t-shirt and blue jeans. And it is a traditional territory of the Chemehuevi people, specifically the 29 Palms Band of Mission Indians. We honor their enduring connection to this land, and we pay our respects to their elders, both past and present. At Desert Knoll, we are committed to fostering an inclusive and equitable community. Our members include individuals from the LGBTQ and BIPOC communities, many of whom have faced historical systemic challenges. The financial and operational demands imposed by the requirement to build and maintain a wastewater treatment plant.
I'm sorry, Mr. Watson. Sorry to interrupt you. Did you take the oath?
I did.
Thank you.
These have disproportionately affected our residents who lack the resources to bear such burdens. This situation exasperates existing inequities and places an undue strain on our diverse community. The largely Republican and pro-MAGA City Council of 29 Palms voted down a proposed city sewage treatment plan in 2023, leaving disadvantaged communities like ours with a major financial handicap. We respectfully urge the board to consider the unique composition and challenges of our HOA. We seek equitable solutions that do not disproportionately impact marginalized groups and that align with principles of fairness and justice. A small portion, only 10% of our HOA fees, goes to our management. All the rest of that $255 a month goes to servicing our wastewater treatment plant. And the current lift station replacement, as mentioned, is going to take a serious hit to our operational and reserve funds. We therefore request the eligibility for a general order for small flows and a four-year period for compliance in order to build up our budget to prepare to pay for these necessary upgrades and maintain our HOA community wastewater treatment on a sustainable basis.
Thank you.
That is all.
Thank you. Okay, do we have any comments from the general public? Any speaker cards?
Well, I mean, we already had the public forum segment of this meeting. But I'll leave it to the board and to the prosecution team whether or not they object to Mr. Kelly also speaking.
Survey.
Good morning, everybody. It's nice to see you again. David Boyers, Assistant Chief Counsel for the prosecution team. I don't see Mr. Kelly on the screen anymore. If he were to reappear, we would object. He was not listed as a witness for the discharger. If you're inclined to allow public comment on this item, I'm happy to allow his comment without objection. but I actually don't see him there, so perhaps it's a non-issue.
And he's back. So based on that, my recommendation is to allow Mr. Kelly and limit his time to 3 minutes as a member of the general public.
I'm sorry, I have nothing to add. Thank you.
Much less than 3 minutes.
Thank you. Okay. Do we have any board member comments and discussion? Okay. Discussions?
Yeah, I would like to, hopefully the board can come up with a long-term solution. It sounds like right now we have a facility that's too big, so they're going to continually, this is going to be an ongoing thing, unless, A, they can replace it with a smaller facility. What I don't know, is there a lamp up in 29 Palms? Or are they governed by the county of San Bernardino?
They are not.
Yes, the city of 29 Palms currently does not have a lamp. They're not covered under one. San Bernardino County does have one, but theirs doesn't cover the area of 29 Palms.
Oh, really? So if a municipality doesn't have one, it's not covered by the counties?
That's correct. Well, not in all cases. In some cases, the municipalities have agreements with the county and they do get covered by the lamp, but that is not the case with 29 Palms.
Do we know how far the groundwater is in that area, the depth?
Yes, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 to 230 feet or so.
Are there any production wells nearby?
No, not in the vicinity.
Okay. Nope. And the average lot's around a half acre?
About a half acre, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Right. And if I may add a correction, that my brain froze and I was trying to come up with threat to water quality. That's the word I couldn't come up with. But yes, based on the 6,200 gallons per day, we found the threat to water quality to be significantly less.
Okay.
So, yeah. Any further questions?
Not from you. Thank you, sir.
Any other questions or comments?
So this cease and desist order would bring their plant, compliance with the cease and desist order would bring their plant into compliance with the original intended volume. Is that correct? Of the 155 houses or whatever.
I don't know.
Right. I guess that's, or would it bring it into compliance with the 40? I guess I echo Ed's concerns here that I don't think...
I think that would be a question for the prosecution team as to what it is, but my understanding is that it would just be to comply with the effluent limits that exist in terms of concentration, but I'll defer to them.
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to ascertain whether or not... So it seems to me that the issue here is that there's a plant that is too big for the amount of discharge being produced, but the standards that are being imposed by the permit that is currently not being adhered to were for a much higher volume of discharge. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So even were they to comply with the permit, I guess their plant is still too big, even if they brought it up to operational capacity, right? So the cease and desist orders, is it requiring them to go above and beyond what their current discharge is because it's trying to get it to comply with this standard that we set for the 150 homes?
177. Yes, that is what it is. That's what the cease and desist proposes.
Yeah, and I remain concerned that that's perhaps not the real issue here, right?
Okay.
So hypothetically...
she wants to address them.
Okay.
Cassandra, Ms. Owens would like to speak.
Okay. The plant is too big for the flow that they are discharging. However, the process to get them to comply really will provide an opportunity for us to address that as well. If the plant were operating properly right now, they would be able to meet most of the limits. Probably everything except for nitrogen. Now, what we have realized is that as a result of the facility not being totally built out, there is an opportunity for it to potentially, and I'm saying potentially because we haven't looked at all the facts yet, enroll in the small domestic plant permit. If they enroll in that permit, the limit for nitrogen, which has been the most problematic so far, will go away as long as they stay below a certain flow. Now, that permit, once you get above a certain flow, also includes a limit for nitrogen.
That is correct.
So, and the permit has the capability, the current system has the capability to comply. Yes. However, things will need to change. But we also need to encourage this discharger to do the work to bring the plant up to normal operating standards, which it's not at right now. And we do understand and have been trying to work with them for 2 years prior to bringing the cease and desist order to you to get them to do that. And so now what we're trying to do is get them on a timeline so that we get the plant operating properly such that there is no daylighting, and then have a permit that is reflective of the current conditions. Because right now, the place that they are discharging is also not the place that was permitted. So there's a couple of problems there that we're trying to work through. And yes, we will continue to look at the small domestic order as an option for them. But the process requires that they also submit a report of waste discharge, a new application indicating what the current number of homes are and the discharge rate, and in order for us to do that analysis.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that the discharger's clear that, yeah, there's a positive action that needs to be taken on your behalf to enroll in this smaller...
Sorry, there's a positive action that needs to be taken on behalf of the discharger to get into the small domestic wastewater treatment systems. I don't think the board can do that by fiat for you.
Yes. No.
Is there, given the disadvantaged community status, is there any, I mean, are there application fees associated with those, with the application, with requesting that permit, or is it, you know?
Excuse me, the discharger would like to make a comment. Daniel?
Yes, I would just like to address what Ms. Owen stated. I believe John Coons talked about the geoflow cooling and the daylighting, and he already mentioned that that's a continuous issue. I would like to point that out, that the rats, and even if we put the flow, the fence around it, he mentioned, the rats are still going to get in there. That's a continuous, that's like a corrective maintenance. That's not a planned maintenance. That's not something we could prevent unless we put a structure entirely around the geoflow pond. So I think that's not an issue. And I don't think we were fighting against any of the engineers' requirements, like I mentioned in my statement. I would like to address again that we have been making our upgrades, that we are almost to the end of that requirement of the six upgrades. We had done 5 out of 6. So I would say that we are conforming to the requirements and we are moving towards those requirements. We just can't. If we had the money, we would pay for it. That's plain and simple. We would pay for it right now. Thank you.
Yeah, I have, prior to the State Control Board saying you had a minimum of 2.5 acres in order to put in a septic tank, unless there is a lamp. I mean, is the best long-term solution is that this is a unique case. There's only 40 homes that they have the, if they get 100% consent, put on a septic tank in their own yard and decommission their current plant. Is that even a possibility? Does this board have that authority to do something like that?
I think the board does have the authority to do that, but it would require my significant work on the part of the city of 29 Palms, right? They would either have to develop their own lamp to allow for that, Right. They could, as the city, be the local agency that adopts their own LAMP and determine their own lot size, right? Similar to what the county of San Bernardino did. Elsewise, I believe that they could probably get into an agreement with the city of 29 Palms and make that a reality also.
Okay.
So,
however,
yeah.
If the regional board, if we issued permits for septics, would have to comply with the odds policy. We would right now, because right in that area, there is no LAMP. The default for us at this point would be the odds policy, which says that it's got to be 2.5 acres.
And our approval of a LAMP would still take into account density. And one of the most important things under the odds policy, or the framework that the odds policy gives us, and what the State Water Board considered when it adopted the policy, is what's the density of housing? How much lot space? How many acres per septic tank? And more importantly, what's the rainfall? So that density, as the rainfall reduces, there's a table, you can see it. But basically, in the as you get less rainfall, you need more space to be able to attenuate the impacts from a septic tank. That's what the policy provides. And so in an arid location, you need a whole lot of space. And as you've heard, the average lot size in this area does not have that space. So the odds policy would essentially prohibit the construction of individual septic tanks here. And I think that from a water quality perspective, some might argue that might actually be a suboptimal outcome anyway.
So you're saying if there's more rainfall, it's beneficial to having a septic tank?
Dilution is the solution to pollution.
Yes.
Okay, dilution.
I'm not allowed to say. Yeah, I've been informed that I'm not allowed to say that ever again.
It's not going to impact any beneficial uses.
I think under the Water Board's framework as it exists, we protect potential beneficial uses. So our job is to protect the groundwater underneath the community of 29 Palms. And so you can maybe argue in individual cases that, this individual septic tank or this individual discharge, you won't see a clearly discrete impact or a traceable impact to one particular source, but we implement the OTS policy on a region-wide basis. We regulate groundwater discharges based on their aggregate impact for the most part and not their individual impact. Now, you did hear that there is a substantial distance to groundwater. So you could take into it, like, if you want to impose, or in the board's exercise of discretion, it could take into account site-specific, circumstances and whether or not that individual discharge would cause or contribute to a condition of groundwater pollution.
Yeah, and I also think it's the financial. I mean, it may be less expensive to sell their current plant and replace it with a smaller plant than putting on 40 septic tanks. I don't know what the difference is, but their operator is in the business, so I'm sure there's facilities like they have that are in need from time to time for future development. So maybe the best thing for this community financially is replacing their current plant with a smaller plant to meet the needs of the 40 homes.
I would guess it was going to cost maybe around $4,000 per septic tank.
How much?
About $4,000 per septic tank.
Oh, I would say more than that.
Microphone turning.
Oh, it's on. I'm just not talking in it. About roughly about $4,000. The regulations for septic tanks has gone up several years ago, and it makes them a whole lot more expensive than they used to be. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if they did like a special assessment on each property for $4,000, put on their property taxes, then they maybe have enough money to do a plant or fix the plant that's there now. I would hate to see them go for a lower flow plant, because eventually there might be some developer come up there and say, hey, I want to finish this development. I know 29 Palms and the other one up there, the next one down. Anyway, water districts, that air, those areas are having, they seem to be having a lot of more people being interested in building up there. At least that's what I've been reading about that area up there. So,
well, then I would suggest that the new developer has to upgrade the plant to meet the flow that he's going to have.
The next one there is, correct.
Yeah, but yeah.
But if they keep the one they've got now, it might be a incentive.
Yeah, but
my understanding is that the based on the record, the developer isn't in control of the wastewater treatment plant. The developer spun off the existing properties into the HOA, which owns and operates, which is the discharger you have before you today. That's Desert Knoll Inc. And they are the one who own and operate the wastewater treatment facility.
But isn't the owner of the vacant lots also an owner then? Because aren't they part of the HOA?
I'll leave that for the discharger's president to answer.
Mm-hmm. Another thing is that the U.S. EPA used to do it, what was it, a third or a half an acre per septic tank? And I don't know where the state board came up with 2.5 acres, but I guess that's they might have overrode the federal.
Yeah, it's based on rainfall.
It's
based on rainfall, yes.
Is it possible that we can defer this action for a meeting and get more information and let the HOA decide what, if their long-term solution might be a different facility or potentially a septic tank or what they've currently requested today?
Memory music, let me just organize this so that you guys have a framework for how you decide make decisions. So we can put this in a decision tree. Option one, or before we get to the decision tree, let's talk about what the legal standard is. The board has the discretion. It is not necessarily required to, but it has the discretion where it finds that there is an existing or threatened violation of a waste discharge requirements order. It may issue a cease and desist order. So with that in mind, that's Water Code Section 13301. So with that in mind, let's talk about your decision tree. So number one, you can either adopt the CDO today, or you can continue it or reject it outright. Within that directions, if you were to adopt the cease and desist order, you could say, we're going to adopt the cease and desist order for now. And while you still maintain your existing order, we're going to require you to comply with that order until the executive officer makes the determination that it would be appropriate to enroll them under a general order or some other regulatory permit coverage. So that is one option. The other option is just say, no, we do not think that it would be appropriate at all ever for the board to put you under the state water board's general order. Or you could direct staff to say, we're adopting the cease and desist order, but we're directing staff to upgrade or update the waste discharge requirements permit. Keep in mind, I believe this permit was adopted in the mid to late aughts. So it not on-site wastewater treatment plant, but, 2001 to 2009 era. And so it is based on our typical permit cycles. It is in need of an update. However, any update would need to comply with applicable plans and policies, including the state water board's anti-degradation policy, which would affect how we assign effluent limits in terms of, are we allowing, would this discharge result in groundwater not meeting the ground water quality objective, which would be 10 milligrams per liter of nitrate and nitrite in particular. So we could either, you could adopt the cease and desist order and say, keep the order as is. You could provide directions to staff and say, please update the WDR's order on an individual basis. Or you could provide instructions to staff and say, look into enrolling them under the general order at a later point in time. Or you could continue it and defer that decision adopting order until they've made a proposal. It's simply up to you.
You know, my preference, as was pointed out in the presentation, this is a disadvantaged community. So I think anything we can do to lessen that hardship is beneficial. And I'd like to find a long-term solution that's going to meet both the property owners and the board going forward. So I would prefer to defer until we receive more information.
Please.
Couple of things. The discharger has only asked for extending the order by 2 years. They have not indicated that they cannot comply. They said just extend it by 2 years. Now, the other part is my understanding is that if indeed they were allowed to, they provided the information and the report of waste discharge in order to enroll under the general permit, that they could comply with the current system. They have not said that they cannot comply using the current system. Just wanted to, you know, bring those two things up.
Any of them, is there any grant money at all available for something like this? Or are they looking for it?
To my knowledge, that has not come up.
Not come up yet. Okay. Just wondering, because there could be. So they might want to think about that.
Yeah. And based upon John Coombs, who's the operator of the facility, it's twice as big as it needs to be. So how it's going to be effectively used and at what cost when the flows are never going to be what they should be to get maximum performance from that facility.
Well, I would like to see us go ahead and do today what staff is asking us to do, because I think eventually that general order for a small flow will help them with the nitrate, according to what we were told, and get them moving on this particular issue. I think if they want to change their plant to a different size, I think the property owners should make that decision, not us.
Can we allow the executive officer? So can we hypothetically pass the CDO with the current timeframes and then allow the executive officer at their discretion to extend it to 2009 or whenever so-and-so accepted, or do we need to make that specific now?
Yes, you can. I'm just trying to make sure that I believe that the revised tentative order allows
the extensions. Got it.
The extensions. I'm just... Yes. Yes. They can. So you can, the executive officer can... may grant extensions for compliance of the final dates. I'm just trying to find the specific provision.
Okay, so I'd like to point something out. The discharger did ask for the final compliance to be extended out to 2029, but there was no mention made of any of the other compliance deadlines. All right, so I would assume that it's going to affect all of them.
Regardless, I mean, we still need to make sure they comply. And to address Mr. Music's board member Music's comments about disadvantaged communities, once again, being disadvantaged does not constitute not meeting standards. That was my point back then.
I agree with that. I was just talking it from a financial point of view. Deferring.
Okay. If no other comments or discussion, I'd like to close the hearing. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to motion to accept staff's recommendation.
And was there a change? 2029, was that already in there?
Well, it had already been mentioned in the order that our executive officer would have the discretion to extend the time frame if necessary, if there were a situation that were out of their control, correct? Mr. Plasencia, it's already in there.
It's my understanding that it was an unnumbered provision in here for me to extend as I deemed appropriate.
So I'll stay with my motion, but I do want to appreciate all of the board members. I learned a lot from listening to a lot of your conversations, but I do agree that we do, you know, there is an issue here that needs to be addressed. And I have complete faith that, you know, you will work closely with the discharger and ensure that they're able to come into compliance and, you know, whatever assistance they need moving forward.
I'll second.
Okay. Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay. Item 8, presentation from California Department of Water Resources on the Salton Sea Conservation Habitat Project. We'll now hear a presentation from Vivian Maisonneuve. I'm so sorry. With the California Department of Water Resources giving presentation on Salton Sea Species Conservation Habitat Project. This is an informational item only. No action will be taken. Please proceed.
Good morning, member of the board, Madam Chair. Very happy to be here. My name is Vivian Maisonneuve. I work for the Department of Water Resources, Salton Sea Restoration Office. So today I'll be speaking about the Species Conservation Habitat Project on behalf of the Salton Sea Restoration Office and also Department of Fish and Wildlife under the Natural Resources Agency umbrella. Next slide, please. So during that presentation, I'll go over what's been completed to date, the current expansion of the projects and the future expansions. And I will also talk about some of the features that we have that are more external of the proper goals and objectives of the project, such as the Vista Point, aim to develop a little more the recreation aspect of the Salton Sea. We'll talk about some planting as well. That's ongoing. And lastly, we'll be talking about the monitoring effort that we also do in coordination with the staff of the regional board. So the Species Conservation Habitat Project was originally funded by several bond measures, California bond measures, for a total of $206 million. $180 million were awarded to Kiewit West Infrastructure back in 2020. The project started early in January 2021, and so far what has been completed are the West Pond, the center pond, and the east pond that we see on the sign right now. Those ponds total 4,100 acres, and we'll show some pictures to illustrate what has been completed to date. And we are currently ongoing an expansion, so the east pond one. And what's not currently shown on the slide here are the western expansion that will go into details later in the slides. The goal of this project is to provide habitat for the fish-eating birds primarily, but also to suppress dust at the Salton Sea on the exposed playa as the sea is receding and to protect health in the region and air quality. So next slide, please. So here we have a detail of the diversion system at the New River. So the principle of the Species Conservation Habitat is to mix water from the Salton Sea and the New River to achieve a certain salinity that will be favorable for some species such as pupfish and tilapia. Tilapia will provide food for the birds at the Salton Sea. And the goal is actually to replace the ecological function that the Salton Sea used to have. Providing different type of habitats, whether they're shallow habitats, but also deeper water habitat for diving birds, for example, and some of the fishing birds. On this slide, we see the diversion system across the span of the New River with our labyrinth weir. From there, the water is diverted into our east and west intakes, where then flow into the east and west sedimentation basins, to attain a certain salinity. So we looking at 20 ppt. The ponds, of course, due to evaporation and seepage and other losses, we aiming between 20 and 40 ppt, knowing that the ocean is roughly between 35 and 40, depending on the location. So the sedimentation basin aims at removing about 75% of the suspended solid from the either the Salton Sea or the New River. And then the water is distributed through gravity to the different basins, to the different ponds. So what we see here is an east sedimentation basin. That's only 30 acres roughly, and we can barely see the entirety of it. And again, what has been completed to date is 4,100 acres, but we are not able to wet the entire area yet, and we'll go into details. Next slide, please. So here's a better view of the two sedimentation basins and the entire diversion system. The sedimentation basins total around 70 acres. 100 acres, so 70 acres for the west sedimentation basin and 30 acres for the eastern one. And we also have a temporary basin further in the background to the left that was put in place so that we could test our pumps until we're ready to turn on the entire system. Next slide, please. So here is what we have functioning to date. So we see again the two kidney shapes that are the sedimentation basin. We see also a little pond that's roughly 250 acres that is currently filled with water. And then we also have those water channels that were built so that the water can evacuate out into the sea so that we can again test the system and make sure that everything is working properly. So mostly the diversion system, but also the saline pump stations that we have out the end of the causeway, pumping salt and seawater and bringing into the mixing system. Next slide, please. So here's a larger view looking north, so towards the Salton Sea. Again, New River is the south end of the Salton Sea, and we're looking north towards the Salton Sea. So to the left, we have the western sedimentation basin, and then to the right, we have the east sedimentation basin. And then what we see following the eastern sedimentation basin is where we're starting to fill the temporary pond, the 250-acre temporary pond, and that's that water you see flowing here. Next slide, please. So here, the pond in question being filled. So you see it's a very small area. We have one loafing island that is currently being flooded and surrounded by water. And tomorrow we'll be actually breaching the temporary berm so that we can start filling the 2,000 acres of this this eastern area. So the reason why, and I think you can see some of those area being dredged, we had to actually take some soil out in order to get the material to create the expansion that's for the eastbound one. And the same principle applies for the western expansion, where we had to take some fill in order to build some berms. So in order to keep the costs low, and I know $206.5 million is not nothing to sneeze at, but it could be three or four times the cost if we were to take that much material. We're looking at more than 15 million cubic yards of material being moved in order to build this project. That would probably cost a lot more if we were to use non-native material or had to truck it onto the freeway using DOT regulations. Next slide, please. So here's a picture of our loafing island. So we have several of those islands within the area. There, of course, has some parameters that had to be respected due to orientation, making sure that the wind, of course, does not affect the birds negatively. We've worked a lot with other agency working on restoration around the state. And of course, all the specialists that were able to help us out to design those islands. So this is just a loafing island. We also have nesting islands that are much, much larger with some debris to allow for nest. And we also have some perches to allow some species to perch and be on the lookout for while they're hunting. Next slide, please. So here's another picture of the east sedimentation basin, some of the backwater that we have due to the Weir action next to the New River, and of course, a temporary bait pond at the end. So the more straight line that goes from the bottom of the East Sedimentation Basin to the right of the picture is a temporary berm that tomorrow will be deconstructed over a two-day time frame in order for us to fill the 2,000 acres that encompasses the East Pond and the East Pond 1 expansion. Next, please. So the East Pond Sedimentation Basin is the pond that you see on the top right of the slide here. It's 750 acres, and with the East Pond, it will total 2,000 acres. So just want to mention that while the original SCH was funded by the state, the addition of the East Pond 1 was actually funding through the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022 to support the commitment of the Bureau of Reclamation and the federal government for better and protect air quality and, of course, habitat at the Salton Sea to accelerate the and support the projects of the state that fulfill that purpose. This is, of course, an association with a conservation measure implemented on the Colorado River. Next slide, please. So this is a picture taken a while back of the progress made for the East Pond 1. So that's the northern berm that will loop and close onto our causeway. That's about a mile out into the sea. The depth here is about 6 feet, and that already been completed, and that would basically close up the 750 acres in order for us to build this habitat. Specifically at the edge of that berm, we are actually going to create up to 10 to 12 feet of depth so that birds can actually dive and chase fish into the Salton Sea. Next slide, please. So this is a picture of our causeway. So it's the eastern side of our project, and at the end of that causeway is our saline pump station. Next slide. So this is a close-up of the end of the berm. So the berms includes, of course, has to be wide enough given that it's built into the sea, so to prevent seepage, but of course to accommodate the depth of the water and to have enough freeboard so wave action and wind does not degrade the berm and becomes a nightmare when it comes to O&M. So the objective for the Salton Sea, while some restoration tend to work with nature, but for the species conservation habitat here, was to really create a long-lasting project that would require very small adjustment on O&M, and hoping that we would basically not have to suffer the consequences of large storm events. So we build it kind of stronger than your typical restoration project where you wait for flood to push through and then rebuild eventually at, of course, a higher maintenance cost, but much, much lower capital cost. The interest here was also to build deep water habitat. And so therefore, once you start building tall, you have to create all those protections. So you see on this picture that we have wave protections. We also have turnarounds in some places to allow for large maintenance vehicles to go by, and also to let the outlets to go from the pond into the Salton Sea. Next slide, please. So this is another picture once completed. So at that point, the berm was touching already the causeway. And Kiewit was still working on including some reinforcement, including riprap and other aggregates. Next slide, please. So this is, again, another picture. You clearly see the aggregate on the seaside of the berm. Wave action is very significant when the wind starts blowing in this area. So, of course, we had to protect our investment, and we sometimes actually repurpose areas that has aggregates and to put them on that side. So therefore, those all the reason only we're using material, the soil, but also some of the aggregate in some areas to allow us to reinforce the berm. So the flooding was not possible at this time. Next slide, please. Oh, actually, could you go back one? I just wanted to point out something. So here we could see at the end of the causeway, that's our pump station. So this little structure that you see there, our three pumps that can total capacity of 20,000 gallons per minute in order to have enough water to compensate for losses and also evaporation. Next slide, please. So now the picture is depicting the future expansion that we have for the western side. Once completed, we're looking at 9,100 acres, so over 9,000 acres of habitat. Keep in mind that it was really hard even with a drone to even look at 100 acres. So it's a very large project. It's really hard to conceptualize unless you're on the field and can really see it. Next slide, please. So the Vista Point is, so just wanted to say that for the expansion, the western one, we are working with Curate currently to issue a change order in order to make it happen. And again, it will still be funded by the federal government through the commitment for the conservation measure at the Coahuila River. So the Vista Point is located at the bottom corner left of the project on along Poor Road. So at the end of Poor Road is where the Vista Point is located. Next slide, please. So the Vista Point here doesn't look like much, but I promise one day it will have a lot of native plants. It will have also the parking. I mean, the parking lot is already there. We already have our public restroom. We have some benches. Those benches will be eventually covered. We'll also have some interpretive panels to talk about the history of the lake, working also with the local tribes to basically say why Lake Coahuila is no longer here, for example. So trying to change the narrative here, because we often hear that the Salton Sea is an accident. So trying to counter that a little bit and kind of say, okay, this is the story of the area, and this is what's really is happening here. So very important, not only for the local culture, but I think for also what the region is about, while of course talking about the important resources that is wildlife in this area. So we also see a feature here that filled with water that is in our interception ditch. So the interception ditch is a ditch that captures flood water and also water from the adjacent ag land. And I forgot to mention that this SCH project is engineered to withstand a 100-year flood event. So we've already passed that very easily while we had the hurricane, and we basically were thinking out, should we open the gates or keep the gates closed? And we were able to withstand this flow very easily with no damage to the system. So I don't want to say it's over-engineered, because you never know, but it withstand that last, those past few system very well. So more about also the Vista Point. From that location, so we don't see it from here, but it's slightly elevated, knowing how flat, of course, the area is, so you can see very far. And this area was chosen because we can see a lot of different habitat in this part of the project. Next slide, please. So this is what we're going to see. So you have to imagine that this is going to be filled with water. So this is taken from like right above the Vista Point. So the berm that you see way out, almost touching the Salton Sea, is our current berm that's done. You can also see different islands. So we have a loafing island that looks like a little squiggly thing in the middle of the picture. And then the kidney shape is actually our nesting island. And we have several of those throughout the project. But this location was chosen so that people visiting, once they have the binoculars, they'll be able to see all different guilds of birds and essentially four out of the five different habitat that the Salton Sea used to offer. The only one missing here are vegetated wetland because it's a saline environment. We couldn't do everything. And we also chose saline, of course, for several reasons, including not having invasive species, also not having to deal with vegetation, but also so that pupfish would also be able to use this environment. So very advantageous for us to use, and the wildlife, of course, to use saline water. Next slide, please. So as far as the monitoring, we have an ongoing effort that is required through our different permits. So next slide. So we have the MMAP, which is the Monitoring and Adaptive Management Plan. We also have our Monitoring and Implementation Plan that's towards the entire Salton Sea and looking at the baseline and how things are evolving and what would be the impact of the SCH on everything else. And we also, of course, have the Air Monitoring Plan that is targeted to other projects that we have around the Salton Sea under the 10-year plan program, where we implement vegetation enhancement projects. So you may have heard of them, but essentially we're putting grass bales on the ground so that we can control the site for dust. And then those bales also allow us to plant and protect very young saplings that eventually grow. So we were very lucky in the past years where we did get a lot of water. So over 6 inches of water for the area per year. So that allows us to have a tremendous growth. We were planning on a 5-year plan to get this site under control with vegetation. The bales are still there. The plants are growing really well in some areas where they were planted. So we are looking at already some very good reduction in dust in the air. So up to 98% based of our last report. So 98% is a huge number and a great abatement. We have also some videos and pictures that show clearly on a site that's not protected versus what's protected. And we can clearly see the difference at this point. We also have reports on those air quality monitoring efforts, and they're available on the CNRA website. Next, please. And I think that's it. And I'll take questions if you have any. Thank you.
I got a question. All the vegetation we see on there, is that the stuff that's been growing up from just Mother Nature has been growing it up, or is this stuff that's been planted, or was it there before?
So on most of the pictures, those are things that were either there before. Along the New River, in some areas, we had to replant to prevent further erosion. But essentially, what we've done, or what Kiewit has done, is to wait for the erosion to stabilize and then plant so that the work is not for nothing. So we do have a revegetation plan on areas that where vegetation was removed for the purpose of construction, and it's always temporary. And most of the area that were where the vegetation was removed were non-native species, but we have to replace them with native species. And this is still in the work until the project is done, because we don't want to start planting and then impact it again and having to replant again. But those are things that we were going to do. But all the vegetation that you see, most of it, especially on this picture here, that's purely Mother Nature working.
And what is the funding source for all of this, did you say?
Yeah, so the original SCH, the 4,100 acres project, was state bonds. So you have Prop 51, Prop 84. We had Prop 68 and Prop 1. So coupled together, we were able to have $206.5 million. The contract to Kiewit West Infrastructure was $180 million for the project itself.
Okay. And what about the O&M? What's the annual for that budget?
So the O&M at the moment I would say right now we're looking probably at something around $2 million. That would be per year. That would be roughly a rule of thumb, but we still have to look into that, into details. And the reason is very simple. Sometimes you need a full-time employee to do certain tasks, and other times you need to contract out. So depending on the bigger the area, the more bang for your buck you're going to get. So we have the economy of scale. So it would highly vary depending on the final product. Once we get the 10,000 acres, we'll see exactly how much exactly this will cost. And we're also looking at things more of a program-wide generally. So if we have a few engineers or scientists, we want to make sure that they don't work only on one project. And same for any labor or anything that work on the project. We want them to be able to do multiple functions. So, but just to give you an idea, we're looking at probably $2 million for the SCH specifically.
And what's the funding source for that, the state?
So at the moment, of course, the state, yes, for the O&M. And so we're looking at different ways to do it. So it could be general funds, could be future bonds. There are recently also the conservancy that was voted for. So that to be determined whether or not the conservancy will take that O&M on. And there is also some of the lithium money that is targeted to help with the O&M and potentially construction of future projects.
So then what entity is going to be in charge to make sure everything's done and oversee it? Is it your organization?
So at the moment, CNRA is the agency that was leading the effort. And so DWR is the authority to do construction, and we, of course, can do O&M. And CDFW, being the trustee of our resources, will be most likely monitoring. But at the moment, we work all together to make sure that, of course, this is not a loss investment.
And if it's properly maintained, what's the useful life?
So at the moment, we're looking at 35 years.
Okay.
And we've built all of the facility so that we won't have to dig in a trench any further out in the future so that we can get saline water for the life of the project. But for now, we're looking at 35 years. Now, keep in mind that we have three saline pumps, and those are going to be under really under harsh condition at the salt and sea, and those will have to be maintained very carefully in order to take 35 years out of them. Just looking at the warranty, it's equivalent of replacing basically the whole pump after 10 years. Even though you were using duplex steel, which is the highest grade that we could find at the moment for the pumps.
So is that in your $2 million a year, or would it be in addition to that?
Yes, that's part of it. Yeah, that's part of it.
And does the lithium extraction have any impact on any of these projects?
No, I can't see where there would be impact. We're not competing for the area. The SCH is outside of the known geothermal area, but you know it's an active system throughout. But we have not. We worked even with Ormat, which is a company working in the Salton Sea, for them to potentially facilitate some exploration within our footprint. But that effort didn't go anywhere. So we're trying to work really closely with whether it's CTR or BHE and Ormat to make sure that everything we do, they're fully aware of it. And so far, we have a great relationship with them. But we can't say that there is any competition for space or otherwise resources.
That was my question regarding the Lithium Valley implementation of the plants. So they're saying that there will not be any adverse effects on the Salton Sea? Or?
Well, I can't speak of the impact of Lithium Valley on the Salton Sea. I'm not aware of the details of their plan, but we are not fighting with them or in competition with them for the area in order to build a project or what the state needs to build at the moment.
And thank you for a fine presentation.
My pleasure.
I believe one of the concerns was that it was taking water from the It might be taking water from the Salton Sea. That's why I'm kind of wondering what your thoughts are.
The Lithium Valley will be
extraction.
I mean, there is, as long as there is ag flowing. So we used to have 1.3 million acre feet of water flowing into the Salton Sea. That would actually reach equilibrium, so that evaporation and other losses. I think it depends on how much and what it would be. And what other beneficial use? That would be my first questions or comments, but I don't have the specifics to really understand if there would be any impacts. I will take the example of our project, the SCH, for example. So think about it as the Salton Sea as a system as a whole, meaning that what we're doing is take some of the Salton Sea and bring it to the shore, because that's where the dust is the most emissive, but that's also where we have the most opportunity to create habitat and also mitigate for dust. So while we may have an impact, quote unquote, on the Salton Sea proper, but as a system, as a whole, it's extremely beneficial to create this project. So without knowing the details, it's really hard to say whether or not lithium will be impactful or not.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Hi, Vivian.
We
worked before together in 2021, and it's great to see how much progress this project has made. I was with Dr. Ben Haddad and the independent review of the water importation concepts. Yeah. I want to say hi. I want to say thank you for, I know you have a busy schedule, so thank you for making time to present this with us. I wanted to ask, other than the Salton Sea annual conference and like the presentations you make to the state board, is there any new partnerships that have been made ever since in order to communicate this or relay this over to locals who have been curious about the progress, but a lot of it, you can't really conceptualize it until you see images or you actually see it yourself. So I'm just curious to know, like, I remember Comité Cívico del Valle, I believe, was one of the community organizations that were part of that communication process with community. But any new ones or any other outlets you've used in order to relate this over to locals?
Yeah, so we organize every once in a while when requested some site visit to the SCH or to other projects. Mm-hmm. We don't own the land, so we work with a current landowner where we, under supervision, we can bring people to the site and help them. So we had several of those site visits. Currently, it's a very, very active construction site, so a little more difficult to have people over. But we do offer those every once in a while. So we work with many, many organizations around the Salton Sea. We have, so our Officer for Communication, Miguel Hernandez, mm-hmm. Often have that slide with, I don't know, probably 50 or 75 names of organizations that we reach out to whenever we can. So we have our newsletter, monthly newsletter. We also have an annual report, but we also do project specific presentation to the communities. And so whenever we have new projects, we go to different communities, we go to the north several times, we do online information also, and we also do in the south end. So anytime we can, we reach out. And we also have some other documents like the community need report that came out to really assess exactly what's needed. Even though some of those efforts will be outside of the scope of this program, but we are really committed to make sure that we capture as much as we can so that we know what's really needed for the community. So those are in general the effort that we have, but we are looking closely with a lot of different organization and have very very chronic meetings, I would say, with them, just to make sure in coordination, just to make sure that they're aware of what we're doing and the progress made.
Mm. Wow. And this was the first time I was seeing the plans for the expansion, so that's exciting to see, and thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it should be part of the annual report as well. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes more general, and then we try to get into the details. Mm-hmm. You may see different drawings of it, but in general, that the intent is definitely to expand on what we have. The system was engineered to be, of course, expanded, and there is still room for expansion as far as the water demand is concerned. But you know, there's also now the need for additional funds, and so more to come.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much. Very insightful.
Thank you. Anytime.
Okay. Next agenda item number 9. The board will now hear the report from Executive Officer Michael Sencha.
Good morning, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. I am Michael Plasencia, Executive Officer. I have a couple of updates. During the month of February, staff from the Water Quality Standards and Non-Point Source Unit coordinated sampling of the New River. The associated staff were Ryan Culhane and Samantha Shapiro. Also in February, staff participated in the draft 2026 California Integrated Report public workshop hosted by the State Water Board, as mentioned earlier by Laurel Firestone. The California Integrated Report is an integration of two documents, the 305B Water Body Health Report and the subsequent 303D List of Impaired Water Bodies. This critical document helps evaluate California's waters, are meeting water quality standards and supporting their designated beneficial uses, and helps identify and prioritize water quality improvement efforts in our region. This workshop provided information on the draft integrated report and invited participants to prepare and submit comments. The associated staff were Rosalind Fleming and Emma McCorkle. Since our last report, board staff attended two community events to provide public outreach and engagement. On February 22nd and 23rd, board staff had a booth at the popular Riverside County Fair and National Date Festival held in the city of Indio. And on March 1st, we had a booth at the Coachella Valley Wildflower Festival. At both events, staff met with community members, provided information on board activities, and handed out children's educational materials, such as coloring books, pencils, and bookmarks. Both events were well attended. Regarding our staffing vacancies, we have selected an engineering geologist and determined a start date. I look forward to introducing him at a future board meeting. We are continuing our efforts to fill all of our other vacancies. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 10, Water Board Member Comments and Suggestions for Future Agenda Items.
Okay, I just wanted to say where I'm going to be going to the April 8th California-Mexico Border Relations Council in Imperial. And I will be also attending the May 9th, I think that's the Pacific Institute Conference on the Salt and Sea. That's in Imperial County at the colleges there. I think we're the same place where the May 21st Salt and Sea workshop, annual workshop, was last year. I think it's at the same place. Both of those, I think they are at the college there in Imperial. Anyway, I'll be attending those. Just wanted to let you go. Anybody else going to the WQCC?
In May?
Yeah, May 1st and 2nd.
I think so.
Better, okay.
Agreed. Anyone else? No?
Okay. You know, I have a request, okay, if possible. I believe the staff used to attend the Integrated Regional Water Management Plans for the Coachella Valley. And it'd just be nice because I know they deal with grants and allocations of who's getting what. And I know from time to time, board members wondering what money's available and who's getting it. That maybe just a little summary or update on what they're doing would be beneficial, if possible. If it doesn't fall within your jurisdiction, then disregard. Thank you.
Member Music, we can look into that and follow up.
Okay.
For me, Madam Chair, and I did forward an email to you late last night, so you didn't miss it. It was because I was awake really late. I did have some community members approach me regarding the septic system in Polanco Parks. Since the, hopefully they get to full closure of the mobile home park that's been very popular lately, the Oasis one. So there's a lot of landowners that are jumping in and building out Polanco so that there's, homes so those families can move into. And there's a lot of questions about what the requirements are, what not. That was way beyond. I was like, no, I don't want to test my knowledge on that. I would rather let folks that actually work on this day to day. So, just to put it out there that, they did contact me and I did forward you the email with their questions. So it would be more specific if you take a look. But maybe something that we can just be briefed on or, something that can be brought forward for information.
Absolutely. I can respond with staff to the email and then also provide a future update for the board.
Thank you. One of the issues out there, I know they've been having problems ever since for a couple of years now, is as they move somebody out one and put them into another home, through the back door, there's somebody else moving in that one that they just moved them out of. It's tribal property there. So I think that's probably the reason. But
yeah, no, my future request is more on the side of the proactiveness of community members that own land, yes, that are looking at building out or are currently building up Polanco Parks to be able to provide an adequate space for those families to move into.
That's a good idea. Yeah, not exactly.
Yeah, the whole thing with a mobile home park. No,
I know. I read that as they're pulling out this way. They're coming in the back door, putting them back in.
I do know that because I do follow up. I do know that they have been, the county, our county supervisor has been putting up barricades where they move a mobile home out, they're putting a barricade so that they can't move one in. But, you know, there's always going to be something, especially when you don't have any control, full control, right? So,
and you got people that need a place to stay that, you know, versus.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, tribal land, so it gets a little more complicated. You need a little more federal support and interference, and it's just, I don't even want to go there. That's beyond this board.
We've been following that for years. The regional board. We've been following this for years. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item 11, chair's report. I attended along with Michael, our executive officer and staff, the annual agricultural tour event in Imperial County. It was, it was a pleasant experience. I was a little bit hesitant. But I ended up, going on a caravan with, the CEO of the ag department and, the officer for the Imperial County Air Pollution Control District, and also the director for the Imperial County Planning Department, and a student from Harvard, and representative from one of our, I believe, assemblymen. So it was an interesting caravan, but it was nice. Michael, I think you guys had a blowout.
You had a flat tire, I read.
You had a flat tire, yes. Yes. So, and for his name, Angel. Jose Angel was there, and he left too, by the way. So I was a little bit hesitant when I went to the very end of it, but everybody was really kind, really, really nice. And they were happy that we were there. It's good that we were present and, we're supportive of.
I'm glad you went.
Yes, yes. And that's pretty much all I have to say. Council, I don't know, number 12, do we have anything to discuss in closed session?
Nothing today.
Okay, awesome. Okay. So, motion to adjourn the meeting.
I think you just closed it.
Okay. We're going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.